We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It's Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN.
So what were you doing 18 years ago as we remember the anniversary of the terror attacks on America when planes of their own volition decided to fly into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and a site in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, according to some media outlets. David, this date, 18 years ago, how much do you remember? I have vivid memories of so much of it. What are your most vivid memories of September 11, 2001?
Oh, you know, I never had been a part of the military to that point in my career where I was waiting for, like, orders to go to war. But that was really the first time for many of us that we found out about stop loss, that we, you know, figured out that there was, you know, these emails and systems that would put out movement orders that would really dictate the future of our lives. I mean, we would spend the next, you know, most of those guys that stayed in Afghanistan, Iraq, multiple tours. Everything that kind of snowballed kinetically after 9/11, it really changed the better part of the last 18 years of a whole lot of people's lives, families and loss and the casualties, but also just, you know, fathers that were and mothers that were just deployed constantly. It's pretty crazy.
Let's get back to the calls. 803-0930, the phone number, 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. This is Dan in Orchard Park. Dan, you're on WBEN.
Hello, Tom and David. Hey, I'm listening, and you get my blood going once again. I decided, you know, I feel like sharing this because you guys have me being once again reminded of how we felt on that day. And I was on a plane, much like your last caller. I was on a plane that had satellite TV flying into JFK, and I'm sitting in the emergency row, and a middle seat was empty, so all three TVs were on all the different stations. We were watching right after the first plane hit, and when the second plane hit, we had a view of the skyline of the city. We were still on our way to JFK at that moment. I'm going to give a Marine a little credit here. I still find it hard to believe that he knew this. But a big man sitting two seats away from me took his belt off and wrapped it around his hand. And he said to me that once a Marine, always a Marine. If they make a move, I'm on it. And he was referring to people in the seat in front of us, the three of them, and they were identifiable on who they were. And at the time, I would have no idea why he knew what was going to go on, but he thought of the people sitting in front of him that might be responsible for what was going on, and he was right. So myself and the people on the other side all took our belts off and followed his lead. So once again, Sergeant Bell, the Marine gets a little credit for knowing something in advance there. I'm sure there was another Army guy on. But at that moment, when we could see out the window that the second plane had hit, we're watching it on TV, the plane took an abrupt turn, started headed up to Stewart, the airport just north of West Point, and they were going to land us there. And it turned out we knew more than the pilot knew. He was asking for updates from all that was going on the TV back then because satellite TV was rare at that time. We certainly knew more than him because most of the planes at the time were on radio silence, keeping the airways clear. And then at some point he made another sharp turn and said, "Hey guys, we're getting lucky. They're going to send us home," and they flew us back to Buffalo.
Wow!
So an emotional time on the plane. Not really sure what would have played out there, but and I'm not sure how somebody would know at that point. If you think back then, who would be responsible for that at that time? And to know that, it's very impressive.
I'm a little bit slow, but can you go over that whole idea of taking the belt off and everything? Because I kind of got a little lost there.
So there were three people sitting in the front, in front of us, directly in front of the emergency row. And let's just say they had headgear on. and they were identifiable on what their nationalities were. And he pulled his belt off, looked at them, looked at me, and said, if they make a move, I'm on it. And they were, he was pointing directly to them in the seats. They did not get up. They did not move from their seat the entire flight, but he took his belt off just in case they did. And he
but, no, but nothing happened.
Nothing happened. He just, I don't know how he knew at that moment that he knew the root of what was happening was from a group like the people sitting in front of us. That was my surprise at the moment. To this day, I'm still surprised that he would have known that.
All right. Thank you very much for the call on WBEN. David, I sometimes find myself wondering if some of the planes that touched down, if that might have saved some American lives, pulling the planes that were airborne down onto the ground in the United States and also Canada and some allied countries. I do wonder how many other terrorists were on other flights that had other targets.
Well, you know, you hear the audio of, I believe, Atta, the, you know, the alleged ringleader of the terrorists that were taking the cockpits. He said that they had planes. You know, there were four that we identified. There was some confusion as to a couple planes that just wouldn't get out of the sky for whatever reason. They didn't land, and so there was fear that they could have been. But it turns out that they were just not listening or paying attention or something else like that. But for the most part, you know, we're finding out a lot more about what happened on Flight 93 as well, and you know, the fact that Dick Cheney gave the order to potentially shoot that down. Many people looked at the debris and thought, you know, there's no way that this plane, you know, crashed the way they said it did. There's the debris field isn't similar. I actually went down to that little museum down there in Pennsylvania, and I'll tell you that the image that we all saw of that plane going down is really just the tip of the iceberg of what is in that wood line. The wood line is just, you know, has a ton of debris, or had a ton of debris there. And there's a lot of elements of that plane that are in that, you know, museum there in Pennsylvania. And it paints a totally different picture than what we saw. Because, you know, we just saw those aerial photos of the field.
Or the big crater.
You just
had
see
people
a big
wondering
crater.
How could a big how, airline make that small a crater?
And where's the you know, pieces of the airline? Where are
right.
they? Well, in that wood line, it was just littered with debris and whatnot. And that's all in the museum as well. And but again, it just shows that there was a lot of things that we, even with all this news cycle, that we were kept from. There was a sanitation of, you know, we never really saw what happened in that building. What was the condition of the remains of the folks that were in those buildings? And it was horrible. It was a very violent and horrible way to lose your life. And, you know, a lot of people internalize that towards, I want to get back. I want to get even. I want to get out there and start a fight. And, you know, I would say that my generation certainly answered that call after September 11th. I never in a million years thought it would last another, you know, I mean, American wars aren't supposed to go on for 18 years. But, I mean, can you honestly say that are we done with terrorism? I don't think so.
803-0930, *930, 1-800-616-WBEN. Tom, in Lakeview, what were you doing 18 years ago?
Yeah, I was working for the city, and we stopped in a little restaurant on Military Road, and all they had was a little 12-inch TV in there. When it happened, everybody's going in awe and watching everything. And then when the plane crashed in Pennsylvania, I'm a Vietnam vet, and all of a sudden, it dawned on me that wasn't an isolated incident. I thought the country was being invaded. And my survival instinct kicked in, and I said, holy crap, we got to get the heck out of here and find someplace safe to go. And I wanted to tell the people what I thought, but I said, they're going to think I'm crazy. So I went outside, and all I did for half an hour is watch this guy waiting for planes to be coming. And if I seen a plane, I was going to tell everybody to run under that viaduct at Amherst Street to for protection.
Now, you really thought that there was an invasion going on?
Correct.
Yeah, I knew it was an attack. I knew it was a concentrated and coordinated attack. I didn't ever think it was an invasion kind of scenario.
Well, like I said, you got to remember I'm a Vietnam vet, so as soon as something happens, you got to think of every case scenario. And if it was happening in New York and then Pennsylvania, who knows where else it was going to happen.
Right. And we certainly remember the time when that plane that eventually crashed in Pennsylvania was unaccounted for. And I remember the reports that it was headed toward Washington, D.C., or reportedly heading to Washington, D.C. Thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate hearing from you, Tom. David, do you think at all that Flight 93, that there's a chance that that was actually shot down on the orders of Dick Cheney or somebody at the White House?
No, you know, at the time, it would not have been something we would have hidden because it was so, I mean, I understand, if you want to know what the political tempo was on September 12th of 2001, you had Pelosi. Every single left-leaning Democrat was basically saying, find them, kill them, and give me a sample of their entrails. I mean, everyone wanted blood. Everyone wanted to get back at whoever, whatever group was responsible for this. And the world was on our side. I mean, Cheney would not, the Bush administration would not have any problems whatsoever to say this is what we had to do. And I think most Americans would have supported it. The fact was the planes that went up there, there's just no chance that you're going to have an F-16 Charlie or anything in the air and engaging an airliner and they're not being a witness to that or seeing something.
Well, stay with us on News Radio 930 WBEN as we remember the dead and remember the events of September 11th, 18 years ago. Let's get back to the calls. Where were you? How did you find out? How did it change your life, September 11th, 2001? Why have we forgotten the division in America? Could you ever have imagined 18 years ago that a country that had come together so stridently and so cohesively could be in such a state of disarray and, I don't want to say dissolution, but disarray and disunity just 18 years later? 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN. PK, on a cell phone, you are on WBEN.
Hey, how you doing?
PK, go right ahead.
Yes, sir. How you doing, guys?
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Hey, Dave, welcome back. Congratulations. Thank you for your service, Tom. Great job holding the fort down while he was gone.
Thanks.
On that morning, I'm a service tech. I settled down to do some paperwork, and over my pager, I got a notification that a small plane had hit the first tower. I went inside, turned the TV on, found out that the second plane hit. Shortly after, the phone started ringing off the wall. My son was less than a year in with the National Guard, and they were trying to get a hold of him. They were trying to get as many guys together as they could to make the move down to Ground Zero. Through the afternoon, we got a number of phone calls, and he actually sent a representative to Erie Community School to gather up some of the guys, and they were making phone calls to the colleges to try to get some of the guys. With all that, we had just enough time to get a cell phone together for him, and he got home, packed a few things together, and they were on a bus and gone by 11 o'clock at night and down at Ground Zero by about 6 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So,
How is he doing health-wise now?
He just hit his 20-year mark back in June. He did two tours. He did one in Iraq, one in Afghanistan. And Dave, you'll like this. After he hit his 20 years, he signed on for three more to do as a recruiter. But he does have some issues.
I was talking about the Ground Zero stuff.
We haven't come across anything yet as far as mesothelioma or anything on that.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. So far, like I said, knock on wood, we've been lucky with that.
Thank God. So obviously a very personal effect on you. And what are your general thoughts on where the country has come in 18 years since the attack with such a personal connection to it?
Oh, you know, like you said, it was so nice to see everybody come together. I mean, the camaraderie, and then you know, everybody go get them, and that, and where we're at today is just so disturbing, with the divisions that we have. I'm quite aggravated. Half the time I got to turn the news off, turn off Fox and stuff like that, because I'm ready to throw a brick at the TV. What we're hearing.
No, it's crazy. If you would have, I mean, and I'm not particularly proud of this, but I don't know if I would have even thought, forget his politics, what he stood for, a president with the name of Barack Hussein Obama to be elected president that soon after 9/11, I would have thought reflexively that would have just been a non-starter, right? Because anything connected at all just shows how, you know, there was a lot of ignorance at the time. Are we going to fight against all of the Middle East? Who really is in our side? Who is against us? We made some, you know, some, I think, tactical blunders by really getting way too close with Pakistan, ignoring India, you know, really kind of isolating partners that we should have really been close with, really ignoring Asia and the Muslim extremism that was out there.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Boko Haram in Africa and Abu Sayyaf. So I mean, yeah, we made mistakes.
And the hashtag campaign never worked to get the girls back, as she played out.
But again, we pointed all the negatives. We pointed all the mistakes. Look, we weren't at a war footing. We were at a peacetime, let's watch Monday Night Football footing. And we went from absolutely nothing to 150 miles an hour in one horrible, you know, Tuesday morning.
Yes, and like I said, and just, yeah, within minutes, my wife's and our son's lives, it just changed.
Everything will, and it's never going to be the same.
Never.
You know?
And the first tour that he took, we didn't have quite the communications as we did when he was in Afghanistan. So, you know, watching the news all the time, and every time you heard this, you heard of that, my wife would be, get on, you know, send him an email, see what's okay, see if he's okay, see what's going on. And you didn't hear back sometimes for a couple of days because they were out on missions, and it just made you, yeah, it just made things worse.
Well, thank you for everything you've been through and what you've given us, and appreciate it, man.
And thank your son for his service, if you would.
I will do that. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. A lot of people want to tell their stories of what happened 18 years ago and all of the amazingly just huge tectonic changes in the country that have taken place since then. You may be one of them. 803-0930, *930, and 1-800-616-WBEN.
Founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
Some people did something, said a freshman congresswoman from Minnesota, to support and justify the creation of CARE. Today I am here to respond to you exactly who did what to whom. Madam, objectively speaking, we know who and what was done. There is no uncertainty about that. Why your confusion? On that day, 19 Islamic terrorist members of Al-Qaeda killed over 3,000 people and caused billions of dollars of economic damage. Is that clear? But as to whom? I was attacked. Your relatives and friends were attacked. Our constitutional freedoms were attacked. And our nation's founding on Judeo-Christian principles were attacked. That's what some people did. Got that now? We are here today, Congresswoman, to tell you and the squad just who did what to whom. Show respect in honoring them, please. American patriotism and your position demand it. For God and country, amen.
Very strong words there, first from the freshman congresswoman from Minnesota, then by the son of one of the victims of the terrorist attack of 18 years ago today. What were you doing 18 years ago today? Your memories of September 11, 2001. That's one of those days I will never forget. I can pretty much run through every minute of that day and what I did. And the memories like yours are just so vivid. Everything is so deeply ingrained in me. You know, I can still feel the warmth, but that slight chill in the air. I can still imagine the crispness of the air that morning, the blueness of the sky, and remembering that the weather pattern under which we were in Buffalo, New York, was quite similar to what they were going through in New York City. And the silence, David, the silence in the sky, where you're used to seeing and hearing all kinds of aircraft overhead and coming in for landing at Greater Buffalo Niagara International Airport, those sounds were stilled. It was an eerie silence, and you realize sometimes the terror of silence as opposed to the terror of explosion.
It's horrifying. It's like when you hear a plane and there's no engine on. That's horrifying. You expect,
and it's not a glider.
No. Even in a glider would be horrifying. But no, you know what I'm saying? It's so crazy how what is normal to you in a city, the humming noises of a city, you don't hear that at night. It's creepy. It's weird. It's different. But I just, you know, the other thing was that it was so we were so helpless in the sense that, you know, what can you do when we're at the very beginning of the information, whenever we want it, movement, when right. The internet is kicking off, smartphones are 6 years away. We go crazy unless we have answers immediately.
Yes, sir.
What is going on? Tell us what's happening. Without a Department of Homeland Security, without TSA, without people to hold, well, they have this, they have, who was in charge? Who was protecting us? It was a really difficult thing. I don't know that because of how we've evolved or devolved the way you look at it, I don't know if we could take a story like that again. I think we would are far too fragile to deal with. I mean, if kids are upset today over thinking about things that happened 150 years ago,
right,
how would we be over having an event on national TV where they saw 3,000 Americans die?
Well, you know what? You have to, I mean, far be it from me, I'm not the world's biggest macho man, but you have got to toughen up, and you've got to toughen up in a big hurry, or else you'll get eaten alive.
And a lot of kids, you know, when we saw the Challenger explode,
terrible,
all these different things. That is a part of a generation that saw Kennedy, Oswald killed on national TV. You see all these different things. It's a part, I think, of the scar tissue. But again, this generation is going to get tested, and they're going to have a situation where, you know, there's going to be an enemy on the horizon that they're going to have to do something about.
Well, there will always be people like you, though, of the warrior class, or, you know, brave, basic Americans who feel the calling to serve your country, as you so remarably have done and continue to do.
Well, that's very kind. But, you know, remember how many old guys wanted to join the Army after that?
Absolutely.
I remember, because I was in a recruiting station at the time, I remember people just walking in, you know, good job, well-dressed, you know, kids are out of the house, I want in. And I also remember going to my duty station and running into a 36-year-old PFC who quit his job at General Motors, you know, making six figures and said, "This, I want to do this.
I re-signed up for the draft."
Exactly. I you know, this guy was, you know, one guy who was, you know, a machine gunner of mine, was like, yeah, my wife's probably going to divorce me over this. Probably I'm going to lose my family. But I gave up a great job, a great house, a pool. Everyone was happy. And I'm here. I'm here to fight.
God
and
bless him.
Yeah, I know. It totally changed my life.
And obviously, God bless people like you, too. And And for those who don't know, David is a Medal of Honor winner as of June of this year, a Medal of Honor recipient, to be more precise and accurate. 4:43 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Let's go to Bill in Williamsville. Bill, you're on WBEN.
Always a pleasure, guys. Absolutely. David, I don't want to use the words of Franklin, but it will live in infamy in my mind and my the sounds that I heard. I was in Las Vegas, flown out there a couple days prior. We were having an anniversary celebration for my brother. So it was our wives and I and my brother. And I remember that morning going down to get coffee on the elevator. And there was a very well-dressed man on the elevator. He says, "Oh, my God, isn't that unbelievable?" I said, "What? What are you talking about?" It's about 7 in the morning, which puts 3 hours behind out there in Vegas. He goes, "Well, didn't you hear?" I said, "No, what's going on?" He goes, they took down the towers and some other things. I said, "What?" So he told me a little bit, and as I got off the elevator and saw the realization on TV and the weeping and crying of people and the, you know, the nervousness because everything became very personal.
And do you remember the sorrow and the sadness of watching the people on TV holding up the photographs of their loved ones in a forlorn hope that maybe they had simply been concussed and were wandering around New York City in a state of bewilderment and confusion, and that, you know, there was an actual chance that they might be found incoherent but still alive?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that was so with the silence out there, now Las Vegas is one of the busiest airports in the world, and it was just the only thing you heard was the fighters and military planes taking off from Nellis, which my brother-in-law used to be at Nellis as a A-10 crew chief, and it was just the silence was very strange, and it was just unbelievable. I remember calling my sister-in-law and saying, you know, we got to get out of the hotel, we got to go outside and just, you know, make sure that nothing comes, because they were actually, in retrospect, they were trying to take out Las Vegas and other spots around the country, too.
No, anything that was a high-profile target, obviously, was at risk. Where were you staying in Vegas?
At the time, we were at the Flamingo.
Ah, at the Flamingo. I mean, the Luxor, very easy to spot from the air because it looks like the Great Pyramid.
Everything out there is just so. But the thing after the fact and looking back, and you know, I have a lot of military family and friends, and God bless all of them and then this country. But the thing that I still feel to this day, and I don't know if David would answer based on his position right now and everything going on, is the fact that I think maybe we jumped the gun. I think maybe we didn't go far enough after the fact, because this whole, especially where we're at now and the attention throughout the Middle East and, you know, being a Christian, biblically, a lot of these things are coming into place. So I'm just saying that. It's just, I think, greatest country in the world, thank God. Myself and all my family, friends, and everywhere we were born here and nowhere else, and unless you really know, you can't appreciate it. But I wish things would have, and I hopefully, David's much more intimate with that. And I don't know what he could say, but I just don't think we went far enough. I think we went too quick.
Too quick and not far enough where, specifically?
Well, I don't think even up to today, and again, the politics, it's a tough thing, especially when you're military. Military, a good friend of mine, she just retired out of Langley, 25 years. She's a master sergeant down there. She just elevated to CSI. You don't talk about the presidency. That's your president. That's your military. That's your country. You are there to do the job. Do the job, and that's it. And that's the military mentality that I get from her, and that whole thing. It's like, and thank God for that mentality. They're here for that. That's what they're there for, and not to, you know, back and forth, you know, banter about politics.
But where do you think, just to follow up on the question, where do you think America did not go far enough?
Like I said, I think it was a knee jerk. I think I was a big fan, big fan of Reagan and all the way up through Bush. But I think Bush Jr., I just think that he wasn't enough. He wasn't I don't know if there was too much emotion there, this and that, and I'm not downplaying that, but I just think that after the fact, when we got all our ducks in a row, did we do things that were too quick, and did we go far enough after the fact in the real direction we should have, and up to today?
All right. Thank you very much for the call. David, any thoughts on the reaction by President Bush? I mean, some of us still think about Tora Bora and blown opportunities there.
Yeah, no, look, there's a ton of mistakes. Hindsight gives you that opportunity to look at those and say, you know, we should have zigged when we should have zagged. The reality is that it was, everything was brand new. We didn't have a net. No one had gone through this before. We didn't know if you know, remember the plane that went down in a suburb of the city? In New York.
Oh, right after September.
Right after. Right. What did everyone think?
The one that was going, I think, to Dominican Republic.
It was going wherever, and it just kind of fell out of the sky, right. And everyone's like, oh, come on. How is that even possible? That doesn't happen. And it's never happened before. Why would it go? And there's all these cops that happened to live there that was, you know, there was all these stories that had police officers. It was a middle-class town, working-class town.
Yeah, I think that was a wake turbulence crash.
Exactly. So people were like, what's really happening here? You know, and then you look at the embassies, and you look at all the other things that have happened. On the anniversary of September 11th, there was a guy that walked into LAX in the ticketing area and started shooting people up. In New Year's, you know, there were all these stories that happened, and we were, you know, how isolated is this? Is this a European problem? What we know now is that England and everyone else was looking at their own population saying, oh, God, you know, we have some people here that we don't really want. And by July, the English are attacked in London.
Sure. And of course, the Richard Reid situation.
That's right. In Detroit, the underwear bomber, the shoe bomber, all that.
18 years ago today, what were you doing? Your memories of September 11, 2001. Do you think the country is ever going to find that kind of unity again? And do you believe, David brought this question up in the last segment, do you believe that given the sensitivities in the United States in 2019 and the crying rooms and the safe spaces and everything like that, that the newer generation could actually handle the stressors of another 9/11. I happen to believe it would. I believe that sometimes people are a lot tougher and a lot more resilient than that for which they give themselves credit. David, maybe I'm smoking weed, but I think that we'd find that they would find, more importantly, that they're a lot tougher than they think they are.
Oh, absolutely. Every generation has proven that. I mean, the enemy has guessed wrong on American youth in every major war we fought, you know, from the Spanish all the way to World War I and II. You know, there is something in our DNA that we're just not, you're not going to push around the United States. You're not going to make the United States feel insecure. It's a very dangerous position to be in to try to push our American interests around and hurt and spill American blood. It's never really worked out well for any adversary.
It is Bowerly and Bellavia. That is the voice of Medal of Honor recipient David Bellavia. Let's go to Steve in Amherst on WBEN. Steve, hello.
David, a woman dressed in black and pink carnations, and I want to tell you, may God always bless you for that. I want to share a story previous to 9/11. I have five brothers. Rambo Jim is my brother. And my brother Gary the oldest brothers are adrenaline junkies. So my brother was diving in Aruba down, he would feed the sharks underwater, whatever. And he was coming back with his wife on the plane, and Mr. Muhammad Atta and his buddies were on the same flight, and they believed that Mr. Atta had met with Saddam Hussein on his private island down in Aruba while he was training to blow up these buildings, okay? And Muhammad Atta and his friends hadn't washed in at least 2 or 3 weeks. They got on the plane. They were unruly. They got extremely drunk. They were threatening to rape female attendants and the women on the plane. Knowing my brother, he played college football at 144 pounds. He had to lose control, and he called them guys out to fight him on the plane that they weren't going to hurt anybody. So he ended up later after it settled down in the cockpit with the pilots up front with the doors locked, and they told my brother that they were training Muhammad Atta. It was Muhammad Atta and his friends that they're being trained in the United States to become pilots. The government's aware of it, except we don't want to train them, but the government is worried about the relations with the Muslim people, and that we would be, that we're racist and everything else and all that.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.